immediately after, when they were releasing the photos, they released four photos of the Situation Room at the time of the operation, which, by the way, the president was wearing a MAGA hat.
Yeah,
in the Situation Room, full suit.
I saw it.
Did that bother you?
I don't know. Sorry. I just don't like it. But whatever. We have bigger fish to fry.
Welcome to Rivera and Rees, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends. Welcome to another episode of Rivera and Rees. I'm Mercedes, and I am here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. I recommend that you hit that follow button. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about some news that happened over the weekend. No big deal. Nothing surprising.
Pretty quiet.
Regular Saturday and Sunday. Just, I don't think we've had this busy of a news cycle over the weekend. I guess probably since the election.
Yeah, since the election. I was going to say before that, I remember the last weekend when it was this, like, crazy was when there was the assassination attempt. That's the last time I remember being, like...
Were we? Yeah, we were already crazy. Recording oh, yeah. by then. Okay.
Yeah. But it was just like, oh, well, there goes the Saturday and Sunday. It's gone now. So, and that felt similar this weekend, but it happened, well, no, it was about the same time, about 5 p.m. on Saturday, I believe. So, yeah, it was wild. And, of course, Sunday's the day when I am pretty diligent about staying off my phone because it's Sunday and we're at church and then our family's together. And it's a special day for us. And every week, told my fam, I was like, look, I'm just going to be doing some stuff.
There's a little potential
little something happening. So. And they're awesome. And so, you know, I'd play a hand of cards and then I'd run into check X or watch a movie and, you know, I'd take a pause break. Pause. Mom needs to go check something real quick. So they get it. But yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. I usually, for the most part, dip on the weekends also, you know, just to reset. And because, you know, even for us, I don't think we can consume it every day, 24/7 nonstop. But this weekend did not allow us to do so. So what are we talking about today? First of all, last night we went to bed with the announcement of an incoming ceasefire. Trump posted a truth, basically. By the way, let me tell you that lately I have been reading the truths out loud to my husband with all emphasis and animation.
Well, do you have to get, is it an app? Is Truth an app? I don't have Truth Social. So again,
so you have no Truth Social, no TikTok. No,
I know.
Who are
kind
you?
Of,
why are
what
we
kind of journalism what is this?
Quit your job.
Well, no, but everybody just takes our people on Truth Social. Everybody just takes whatever Donald Trump says on Truth Social and then like posts it on X. So I don't really need Truth
Social.
Yes,
but the only problem is that there have been a handful of times, which I've actually fallen for this, unfortunately, where somebody creates a truth that sounds like Trump.
Yes.
And then I post it. I'm like, wait a second, let me go verify that. So then I got to go over to Truth and it's not there. So that's the only thing.
What we need to talk about before we get into like the nitty gritty is just that I want Trump to end every truth with thank you for your attention, to this matter. That's how
He's got He's got
that
two of them going.
Okay, what's that? What's the other one?
Well, he's got the thank you for your attention to this matter because we need t-shirts, okay?
Yes.
I think we all need t-shirts in some
thank
form
you
or another.
Attention to this matter. That's going in the merch shop.
And it's new. That's the thing. Like it's not like he used to do this and Trump,
Someone said it somewhere or he said it out loud, like,
I like that.
Planned. And then when it came out, he's like, wow, that sounds good. I'm adding it.
Well, also, I'm pretty sure that he did it like one time on social media and everybody responded to it. Like, I love the thank you attention to this matter situation. Uh-huh. And he's like, we're going to go with that.
Yes.
New line.
Well, but what's he's the also, other one?
Well, he's been signing off on his truth, which I find amusing because obviously it's him, but he signs off Donald J. Trump, President of the United States in all caps.
Like, we know, but isn't the whole truth in all caps? Like the whole, all of his truths are in caps, aren't they? Well, all caps?
No, not the entire thing. It's just like he uses a lot of capitalization. So, you know, for emphasis or whatever.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So, yeah, those are his two recent sign-offs. Thank you for your attention to this matter. And then also the all caps, Donald J. Trump, full name, Donald J. Trump, comma, President of the United States. So,
man,
I guess those are the most official. I don't know.
I guess.
I have no idea. But I have been reading these out loud to my husband because he's just like, I can see him from my desk. Yes. I'm like, here's an update from the president. And I read it with all emphasis.
Yes.
Exclamation points, bold.
The way it should be.
Quotes. Yes. I don't do a Trump voice, but I do use all of the other animations that come along with it. So last night we went to bed with the announcement of a pending ceasefire. He said like in the next 6 hours and then in the next 12 hours, he set some, I guess, benchmarks that had been agreed to for Israel and Iran to begin standing down. And we have woken up this morning. It is currently 6:44 in the morning. And reports are 4 hours after the official ceasefire began. Iran or somebody within the country of Iran fired on Israel. It was a direct hit on a home or apartment complex. I'm not 100% sure which one it was, but it did directly hit a bomb shelter. Bomb shelters usually are for protection of surrounding fire, but it hit the shelter, unfortunately, directly, and it killed a family of four.
Wow.
So that's currently where we're at as of this morning. By the time you guys are listening to this, we could be somewhere completely different.
Right.
It remains to be seen. Iran or the officials in Iran are denying it. Israel is.
Well, I have the IDF's statement.
Yeah, thank you.
Right here. And Israel's defense forces said, quote, in light of the severe violation of the ceasefire carried out by the Iranian regime, we will respond with force. And that was the chief of the general staff.
Yeah. And then Israel War Room, which this, you know, mind you, this is from, we haven't gotten this directly from any officials in the U.S., but it says that the U.S. is informed about Iran's violation of the ceasefire and backs Israel's right to respond by striking IRGC terrorist targets. So the belief is that the IRGC itself has stand down and that there are terrorist proxies within Israel or people, sorry, not Israel, excuse me, Iran, who do not want to end the fight and that they have gone rogue, I guess, and fired on Israel. I think that remains to be seen. We don't know. This is fog of war. So that is developing. Mm-hmm. But what we're going to do today is we're kind of going to give you an update of everything that happened over the weekend until, I guess, pretty much last night.
Yeah.
And then we also put some questions out or a thread on our Substack for people to ask questions. We're going to answer those questions. And we're just going to have a discussion today about what happened. How we feel, what is the speculation, you know, we'll see how it goes. This is a little bit more of a free-flowing episode, a little unfiltered maybe. If you're new here, Unfiltered is a reference to our once a month podcast that is exclusive for paying supporters. So I highly suggest that if you love us after this episode, which you will, that you consider becoming a paying supporter and you will get bonus content, including community. So it was, okay. I guess we can go back to Trump announced via Caroline Leavitt at a press conference that he was going to be making a decision on whether or not to fire the nuclear facilities in Iran with the bunker buster bombs, which was the big what everybody was waiting for a response on right before the weekend started. So I think that press conference was on Thursday or Friday. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I can't remember either.
I feel like it was Thursday maybe. And then he said that in 2 weeks, I'll decide if we're a go.
Okay.
Everybody's like, oh, again, another like 2 weeks. Then he left on Friday to Bedminster in New Jersey, attended a MAGA dinner gala thing. And then was coming back by the following morning, which I think should have been a sign to begin with.
Yes.
Rachel and I, after that press conference, we were having conversations on the back channels. And I was like, I think this is happening this weekend.
Yeah. And the more I thought about it, too, I was like, like, and we mentioned, we kind of have the same brain. It was like, he'll do it on a weekend. It won't disrupt the stock market that much. I mean, you hate to think of it in those terms, but that's how he thinks about things. And I mean, it's how a lot of world leaders think about things when they're in charge of not just the national security of their country, but the economy and lots of moving parts. So I think that was definitely played into his decision making.
Well, and that's one of the things that we were discussing over the weekend. I said, if we were to go back and remember the time that they killed Soleimani, it was also very like, nothing's going on, don't worry about it. If I'm not mistaken, and if I have the correct event, because there was also Syria, but I think he was at a dinner with Xi.
Mm-hmm. That's what you said. They were at Mar-a-Lago, I think.
Yeah, at the time of those strikes. And so I was thinking back to then. And I'm thinking, through the weekend, this is a good time because markets have closed. And if it happens early on the weekend, which I was thinking Saturday, it gives us like at least 24 hours for assessments to happen, for information to get out there. And so when the markets open on Monday, everybody's kind of got more information and they will remain calmer. Also, not to mention the news cycle, you know, even though obviously this is a conflict, it'll be a little bit slower over the weekend.
Yeah.
He's already kind of announced, he had already announced, like there was been long speculation that this was happening, that there was a lot of meetings happening, that something was going on and that they were just waiting for him to make a decision. So on Saturday, it was the news broke. Actually, initially we started, I think we woke up on Saturday morning. And there were reports, or maybe Friday night.
There were reports
of
things that were happening. Things were
yes, there were reports
down.
That the B-2 bombers had left Missouri and were headed west to Guam, which I was like, that's a weird way to go to the Middle East. I'm like, why are you going that way versus going the other way? It was all over the news. The B-2 bombers had left and were headed west. It was revealed later that that was a decoy, that there was another group of bombers that were headed east. Yeah. So then we got the reports that strikes had begun on three nuclear facilities in Iran. Mm-hmm. So there was the infamous Fordo, which is the one that we've talked about a lot that is underground. There was, and then there were two others. One of them was above ground.
I forget the name of the other one.
Yeah, I thought I had the names here, but one of them was above ground and the one that was above ground was hit with Tomahawk missiles from a submarine.
Which is insane if you think about
400 miles. It was like, I think 400 miles away.
I mean, think whatever you want about the entire operation, whether you agree with them doing it or not. Set that aside for a second. And just, I really, when I was listening to, and we'll get to it, the Pentagon briefing on Sunday morning, I was putting on my false eyelashes, getting ready for church and watching the Pete Hegseth and the Joint Chiefs. They're explaining this mission and I'm like, this is incredible. I called Sean in. I'm like, look at the precision, the intricate like design of what they did and how so few people knew about it. There were no leaks. It's just, well, it's incredible.
It's impressive. It's wild. Yes. So we had seven B-2 bombers launch an 18-hour mission from Whitman Air Force Base at 12 a.m. Saturday, June 21. Total surprise. Now, mind you, this isn't just a total surprise for Iran. These bombers did not appear on anybody's radar. Didn't appear on China's radar. Didn't appear on Russia's radar. It appeared, they were like ghost, nowhere, okay? So they hit the Fordo underground facility. It's 80 to 90 meters beneath a mountain. Multiple hits, 30,000 pounds of bunker bombs. Natanz Enrichment Complex, their main uranium production facility, reportedly destroyed. Isfahan's conversion facility, which is a uranium processing plant, was severely damaged. And the report is that this operation required 14 bunker busters were used for the first time, plus 30 Tomahawk missiles. So the Tomahawk missiles hit the above ground facility. I believe it was six that were used on Fordo. The report was it was like three, no more. It was more than six, but like I think it was two bombers on each one, but that they hit the ventilation staff. So, and then everybody's like making references that this is either Star Wars, depending on how old you are, it's Star Wars or it's the latest Top Gun because the whole operation is about shooting through a vent to take out a facility. I mean, it's wild. So we did see satellite imagery afterwards where you could see the, it doesn't look like stuff just like how you would imagine in your head where things just blew up.
Right.
What you see are massive holes, like, which from a satellite looks like little pinpricks, but you see these holes within like two spots, especially above Fordo. What to me was telling was not only, apparently this operation has been in development for months.
Wow.
Which reminds me that, remember, about 2 months ago, there was like rumors of Trump and Netanyahu like being on the outs. Then there was also,
he was at the White House and came and visited.
It was just like, I feel like this entire, and so you guys think, like, to say, because people are saying, oh, so did the president never really want to deal in peace? This is a plan that was being set and planned, or was planned ahead of time, if there were the opportunity or the need to, I should say, the need to use it because of negotiations falling apart. And so yeah. The reports are that it came to the point where Iran was like, it didn't matter what they said. They were just completely unwilling to get rid of their nuclear program, which is what the president was, the primary thing that the president was asking for. So also very telling is that there were no leaks, and there was no leaks because, asterisk, no Democrats were briefed on this. I just want to put that out there.
And you know what? It has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about, but kind of does. Today in my Dawn Dispatch, I always do it on this day in history. And 3 years ago today, Dobbs was decided. So it's been 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But we'll remember that the leak of the Dobbs opinion came out about a month before. And we still don't know who leaked that. And we've been told we're going to find out, like, you know, for years we've been told, and we haven't. But there's always been speculation that it was, of course, a very, very angry Democrat who got their hands on it and leaked it intentionally. Ahead of time. And you just wonder, you're like, this was so ironclad. It was so closed. Nobody knew. It's quite an operation to pull off and there be absolutely no knowledge of the bombers in the air. There weren't even like murmurs. There was nothing. It just happened. And it was like, oh, and that they've been planning it for so long. It really is a testament to the administration. You have to give them credit for that. And so I don't know. I'm still over here waiting for to find out who that leak was. And I mean, think about all the different times there's been leaks.
All the time.
All the time. And so maybe, I don't know, the fact that...
Well, I mean, I don't want to say that the Democrats are always leaking. I'm just pointing it out. I'm just asking...
Just saying things. Just saying
presenting
things.
The fact that... There was no Democrat leadership. Now, let me specify. There was no Democrat leadership or no Democrat, like, who were on the Intelligence Committee.
Right.
That were notified ahead of time. There are reports, however, that as the operation was being launched, the White House reached out to the Democrat leadership, which was Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, and then whoever is the minority head on the Intel committee, which I can't remember who it is off the top of my head.
I always forget.
Yeah. So they were being informed, not briefed, not consulted on the operation beforehand. They were being informed, hey, by the way, we're doing this.
And I
believe Hakeem Jeffries didn't pick up the phone or something.
Right. Of course not. I think it was right after the B-2s were airbound. Like they were in the air. This was like, we're already doing this. Just FYI. Before you see it on Twitter, this is what we're doing.
Before the news breaks.
Yeah.
Don't say we didn't tell you ahead of time.
Right.
We just didn't consult with you.
We just didn't tell you ahead of time.
Now, the Democrats were making like a big deal about this. They were very upset about it. But I just want to point out, and it's also very telling. It's interesting when we talk about like narrative, because we will discuss narrative a lot here. You know, there's been a long attempt to discredit Hegseth, to the Joint Chief Raising Kane, I think is Dan Kane, but they call him Raising Kane. He is probably, I think, historically one of the lowest ranking to serve as the head of the Joint Chiefs. And so there's been like a lot of discussion to try and portray the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, is being managed by people who are just inept and incapable.
Incompetent, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it's real telling that that did not work this time.
Yep. They can't point to this.
Can't this? They're upset about other things. So yep. After the strike, of course, you know, Netanyahu put out a statement. He was very excited. I don't know if you saw that statement. A lot of people were critical of his excitement, which cool.
He was like profusely thanking the United States. Yeah. Just like,
I mean, which makes sense. I mean, yeah. What is he going to do? Be like, cool, man.
Thanks, I guess. Pat you on the flippity flip.
Like, yeah, I don't exactly understand that. So now afterwards, there was also a big concern. I will bring this up. So I think shortly, maybe about a few hours or the afternoon, I think it was by Monday morning, I started to see reports of satellite images of the Fordo facility, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. where there was about an estimate of 8 trucks lined up outside of the facility, mm-hmm. which led to a lot of speculation that it was Fordo and Isfahan, which Isfahan, mm-hmm. I think, is the uranium enrichment facility.
Yes.
Let me double check. Yeah, uranium processing facility. That there were trucks outside of those facilities. People are speculating that Iran was anticipating the strike, and so they began to move uranium out of these facilities. This is uranium that has been enriched to 60%, and people are speculating that it was moved to an undisclosed location. Estimates of 400,000 plus kilograms of near weapons grade uranium, which would be enough for 9 to 10 weapons. Uranium is compact. It is small. It is easy to transport. It is typically in small containers. Mm-hmm. Now, anyone who is, first of all, 60%, to get to 60, from 60 to 90% is a matter of like a week, maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And 90% is what is used for nuclear missiles. However, you cannot get to that 90% if you don't have the facilities to get there.
Right.
So if the reports are that these facilities have been damaged, as it is speculated to have been damaged, and I've actually been watching several reports on this, where there was this brigadier general that was on Fox News yesterday that was giving a rundown on this. And he was explaining that, you know, from what we can see in the initial reports, knowing the damage that these bombs can inflict, where they hit, the size of the holes, the belief is more likely than not that at a minimum, these facilities are buried and you cannot access them.
Yeah.
But the belief is that they've been put out of service. Okay. Also, afterwards, Israel did conduct additional strikes on these facilities to block off access to them. So the Iranians could not go in and assess and try to dig anything out. Yeah. However, there are concerns that some of the uranium was moved. I have no inside information on that. No idea. Okay. I think it is a valid concern. However, what I will add for context is if that uranium were to be used for any reason anywhere else, let's say it's even outside of the country of Iran, uranium has very specific markers that they would be able to be connected back to Iran. So like you would know that, for example, Iran went and gave it to this proxy or to China or to Russia or whatever. And then in that process, if it gets revealed, or if, I don't know, if they were to use it or if inspections were to be done on these facilities, we would be able to tie them back to Iran. So that's number one. Number two, a lot of the conversation that I've been hearing is that it is more likely than not that Israel is aware of where this stuff went because they have so much intelligence and they're so embedded in Iran. So my speculation or my hope would be is that it is being tracked. And if it did get moved, that they're aware of where it went. But the general, obviously this is a battle of narrative. They're not going to be like, yeah, so there's uranium floating around. Right. You know what I mean? So, but what could happen? Yes, that could be used in a dirty bomb that could cause some pretty significant damage, but obviously it can't reach to the levels of a nuclear bomb. So, you know, That would be, I mean, I think that would require, first of all, somebody to get into Israel. It's not going to be getting into the United States anytime soon. I would be shocked. I think the bigger concerns is like how it could spread out more in areas of like Europe and the Middle East and Israel. But I think the general belief and hope is that somebody's got their eye on it and they know where it is and that there's
monitoring it.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
You know, as a homeschool mom with four girls, finding news content that's actually appropriate for kids feels almost impossible these days. Everything's either dumbed down to the point of being useless, or it's filled with stuff I have to pre-screen because, heaven forbid, we get actual facts without a woke agenda attached. That's why I love Worldwatch. It's a daily news video designed specifically for kids that doesn't make me nervous about what they're going to hear. My girls actually get excited when it's time for our 10 minutes of World Watch because it covers real stories, the big, important stuff, and the fun, lighter things, all with a biblical worldview that aligns with our family's values. And can we talk about how refreshing it is to have news that recognizes God's design in everything? Plus, with a paid subscription, you get access to their full archive. So if we want to revisit a story or catch up on something we missed, it's all right there. World Watch delivers fact-based video news you can feel good about. As a busy homeschool mom, that's exactly what I need. Daily videos that help my kids explore the world while keeping our faith at the center. Check out the link in our show notes to get 3 free months. Trust me, it's an easy win for any parent who's tired of having to watch everything ahead of time just to make sure it's safe for their kids.
Then yesterday, let me see, am I missing anything yet until I talk about what happened yesterday on the, I don't think so.
No,
so,
I don't think so.
Then on Monday evening or Monday afternoon, I think it was, we started getting reports that Iran was preparing to hit a military base in Qatar.
Yeah, it went from the airspaces are closed over Qatar and Kuwait and Saudi, well, Kuwait and Saudi Arabia closed theirs a little bit later, but we started hearing Qatar has closed their airspace. And then all of the X feed went from that to all caps, every single one of the feeds I follow. Like, yeah, basically like the threat is imminent. It's coming. So here, and then all of a sudden it went to, okay, they've launched. Here it comes. And so then we all just sat there and waited basically to find out if, you know, if there were any strikes on civilians or on the actual base, if they had evacuated the bases or not. And turns out, yes, they had.
Yes. Yes. All of the above. So we started getting these reports about Iran preparing to fire on Al Didid, I think is how you pronounce it. It's the Qatar, the base on Qatar. I think like an hour, hour and a half before it even happened, and telling, you know, bases in the area to prepare the airspace. I think there was even reports of GPS jammers being launched.
Yeah.
So initially when I started hearing about this, it again reminded me of past retaliations, with, like when Trump had hit Soleimani.
Yeah, in 2020.
Yeah. Now, I will say it was different because the span of time was different. I think the last time it was like, I think almost 10 days before they attempted to strike an airbase. And I, if I'm not mistaken, that was when they did hit a facility or some barracks, and there were some servicemen that had head injuries. Nobody was killed, but they did have head injuries. This time is a lot quicker. I think we're talking about 24 hours maybe that they're responding, or 2 days at the most. But I saw that they were getting all this notification. They're letting them know. It was 6 missiles were fired. Every missile was intercepted by a Patriot missile, by defensive intercept. And nobody, thank goodness, nobody was injured. And then it was, there were reports afterwards that the base had basically been emptied.
Yeah.
Everybody was removed from the, so they were giving significant heads up. Not to mention, like, I think they were already on alert because of the strikes on the nuclear facilities. So it's like, hey, heads up, striking on these nuclear facilities, be aware that there might be possible retaliation. So they were already at the ready. And then on top of that, Iran basically sends a memo to the White House to let them know Yeah. We're going to we're going to fire on your base. Let everybody know so they can all get out of the way. That is essentially what happened. Now, a lot of people are like, why? What is the point of that? What?
Yeah, I got
why
a whole lot of that. They're like, this is like theater. What's going on? Correct. Why are they telling them ahead of time what they're doing? I'm like, yes, welcome to war in 2025. Well, like, this is... Go ahead. What were you going
to say? No, I mean, also welcome to a propagandist regime is the other issue. So what a lot of people assume is that if you're literally, if you're actually in conflict, the element of surprise is what gives you the upper hand, as we had demonstrated over the weekend. So if your goal is to actually inflict damage, you're not going to put any kind of information out there to give anybody a heads up of like, get out of the way. Basically. Right. Now, you have to understand that Iran is a is an authoritarian propagandist regime. The entire purpose of what happened afterwards, of their response, was to demonstrate or to have propaganda, some kind of material that they can spread internally in Iran to tell people, the Iranian people, and their supporters within Iran, that they've hit the evil big Satan, you know, United States, we're dominating. Because if you haven't gone through the weird corners of X, the propaganda that is coming out of Iran is wild right
now.
And
you have to understand, there's no, it's like state-run television. So they can just like not tell the people of Iran things. They can totally scrub the internet and the television of whatever they don't want their citizens to hear or see. They have an outsized control over the consumption of media within their country. And so it is like performance art almost. They satisfied, you know, in a sense, the element of their citizenry that really, really wanted a retaliation, but they did so basically being like, we're gonna, like, it's almost like they're calling the United States, like, we need to do this. We got to save face.
Just do me a solid, bro.
Just please evacuate. We'll do this. We'll be done. Okay. Just please understand what we're working with here. And it's hilarious to think about it that way, but that's kind of the way it is if we had to simplify it.
Well, for sure. Because I remember seeing videos afterwards where they're showing the fire of the missiles. And then like it's cutting off just at the right time of like things get of their own. Because you can see in the sky, it looks like fireworks. It's really wild.
Yes.
Where you're just watching them like pop, 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 pop as they're getting intercepted. I saw a video too, which I was going to share on my stories, but it was a bunch of servicemen. It looked like they were on a beach watching this whole thing go down. And they're just celebrating, and it was very colorful language, though. Like very colorful language. So I'm like, I'm not going to put that in my stories, but it was for sure.
But just, like, if you DM us, we'll give you the link.
They're just hanging. This is like they were watching a fireworks show, and but Iran cuts those things off, and then they're, you know, proclaiming in the media about how they killed 1,000 Israelis, how they decimated the U.S. base.
The base is completely gone. And it's then you realize, too, like how controlled the citizenry is, that they can just say things that are just patently false. Like there's absolutely no factual data to support your claim, and they'll just say it. Like it's the sky is a lovely orange color, or it, you know, it's a rainbow. It's it, like they totally just make stuff up, and they're the people by and large will be like, oh, okay, because that's what they
were told. Well, I mean, they don't really, even people who are in opposition don't really have a choice, because like the internet has been cut off too. So even if they wanted to go on their own and try and seek out information, I don't know, using VPN, I have no idea.
They
can't.
Right.
Because they've been completely shut off. So that is what happened there. Trump, to his credit, knowing that they, I mean, he doesn't have to posture. We've already sent multiple stealth B-2 bombers into enemy airspace without the knowledge of any of our enemies. We have already shown our dominance. So if you want to talk about what, if we were to have a discussion just generally about optics, quote, propaganda, because propaganda can be good and bad. Not only, you know, we have to look at it from our advantage too, because a lot of people are like, isn't America first? I don't realize that this isn't just taking out the nuclear threat that was in Iran, which we have talked about because people are like, well, they weren't building bombs. And I'm like, we'll get into that in a minute when we talk about the question with Tulsi's response. But in addition to that, considering all the conflict and all that we have been seeing and we've been dealing with from the previous administration, and because of the previous administration's lack of response, this, in addition to taking out the nuclear threat, added a display for China and Russia to realize this is what we can potentially do.
Yeah.
You think that you can just like sit back and agitate us? You didn't even know our bombers were over one of your allies.
Well,
you
this
didn't
wasn't
know
even
we were coming in.
Right.
Go
and
ahead.
I think people have to understand there's more in when what I'm hearing a lot of people on social media, they're equating it to Iraq, first of all, which I believe personally is misguided.
Masini, I have an article on that, by the way.
An article about it. I think that that is.
I made people mad.
Well, yes. One person specifically just really doesn't like you and I. But I think that that's short-sighted. Anyways, but what I hear a lot of people, the talking point right now is this is not America first. This is not in our national security interest. We have problems at home. Okay, first of all, no one's denying that. We have tons of problems at home, obviously. But we also have to take into account that we will have no problems whatsoever at home or otherwise if we don't at least keep an eye on the national security risk that a China-Russia-Iran threat poses to us. And then you also have other moving parts that people don't even think about. They were posturing for China and for China right now, especially since it's being rumored that China's going to try and take over Taiwan in a matter of a year and a half. And again, people are going to go, well, what does that have to do with us? That doesn't have to do with us. Oh, my gosh, you guys, it has to do with you. It has a lot to do with you. It has a lot to do with the world economy. It has a lot to do with our national economy. And so we have to be able to like zoom out a little bit and at least have a conversation. We might not agree on the actions of the weekend, but we should at least be able to consider that the only things impacting Americans at home are things that happen to Americans at home. No, we're a global nation, and like a lot that happens outside of our borders impacts what happens inside of our borders, and that needs to be considered.
Absolutely. And so to give you guys an update as you were talking.
Oh, did you see the stuff from Trump? Did you see?
I literally just saw it while you were talking.
He's not happy.
He's big mad.
Big mad. Can we play it? I haven't even heard it. Obviously, I'm sitting here, but.
Yeah, I mean, I can pull it
let's
up.
Just, let's just jump into it. Ceasefire, no moss, Donald
yeah,
Trump.
Well, because we went to bed last night. Trump announces big ceasefire. He's very excited. All caps kind of stuff. Like I said, I read it.
Attention to this matter.
Yes.
It's a ceasefire.
I read it in full animation for my husband. We all went to bed, woke up this morning with the news that Iran or somebody within Iran had fired on Israel. So let's see what so the president is now on his way to a NATO meeting. So he's headed out for a NATO meeting.
And he's already in a bad mood about that probably because he hates NATO. So he's already, it's not a great morning for him. I also believe he curses. So just like,
yeah, he is so ticked off right now. It's not even funny. I mean, it is funny, but let's listen to the president and his reaction as he is being asked on his way to Marine One about Israel.
That have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the they're doing. Do you understand that?
Yikes.
He's big mad.
He's big mad. Like, so he's basically saying, if you couldn't hear all of it, he says basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard and they don't know what the F they're doing. And then he followed it up with a truth.
Yeah, I have it too.
Said,
go ahead.
Israel, do not drop those bombs. If you do, it is a major violation. Bring your pilots home now. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States.
So anyone who was accusing Donald J. Trump of wanting to do regime change because of some truth that he did. Clearly, that is not the case right now. I don't think there is any question that that is his goal here. So thank you for your attention to this matter. End of podcast.
Before that clip, he did say, when I say 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and drop everything you have on them. I am not happy with Israel going out this morning because of one rocket that was shot perhaps by a mistake. It didn't land. I am not happy about that.
All right. So before he went and left and dropped his F-bomb on his way to Marine One, he was
unintended,
just for emphasis. He was asked about Israel and what the expected response was going to be, or what he would hope for them to respond. And so this is what he had to say.
I don't think so, but I'm not happy that Israel's going out now. There was one rocket that I guess was fired overboard. It was after the time limit and it missed its target. And now Israel's going out. These guys got to calm down. Ridiculous. I didn't like plenty of things I saw yesterday. I didn't like the fact that Israel unloaded right after we made the deal. They didn't have to unload. And I didn't like the fact that the retaliation was very strong. But in all fairness, Israel unloaded a lot. And now I hear Israel just went out because they felt it was violated by one rocket that didn't land anywhere. That's not what we want, I'll tell you. And I'm telling you, I'm not happy about that, Israel, either.
Now, I'm not 100% sure why he's saying by one rocket that didn't land anywhere. Do you have any idea why he's saying
just
that?
Just now, Nick Sorter, he is a journalist. He's been on like Fox and Newsmax, blah, blah, blah. He put, the idea of Iran violating a ceasefire with a single missile that they know will be intercepted rather than firing off a barrage makes zero sense. There's got to be more to this. Israel's now pledging to, quote, make Tehran, tremble, close quote, in response. So I am not quite sure. I feel like I need an ongoing timeline of events to keep everything kind of straight in my brain. But it almost seems like it was perhaps a mistake that just one missile was launched, knowing it would be intercepted.
Yeah.
And then Israel capitalized on that and said, OK, they violated it. Here we go.
Well, I'm just confused. The reason I'm confused, this is, you guys are listening to us real time trying to work this out. The reason I'm confused is because as far as I know, There was a hit on Israel that killed a family of four.
Yes.
So that's why I'm trying to figure out where that comment is coming from, unless
he's talking
about beforehand and then they started to exchange fire. So that's where we're at right now. But those are the president's initial reactions as he's headed out to this NATO summit. The series and sequence of events, my assumption is that by the time you listen to this podcast, you'll know a more than we will. So we're going to keep kind of seeing if anything else happens while we're recording. But getting back to what we were discussing, trying to keep things straight. So afterwards, now let's start going into some listener questions, because there's additional context that is going to be answered via these listener questions. So one of them was a question about the Strait of Hormuz and whether or not oil prices will go up with Iran's threat to close the Strait of Hormuz. Context: the parliament voted to close the Strait of Hormuz. However, the strait has not yet been closed. So as of yet, there's nothing happening that would affect oil prices right now. In fact, I think yesterday the reports were that oil prices were down and the stock market was going up. Now, I'm not trying to be Trump and talk about, you know, celebrating my economic prowess, simply pointing that out because markets tend to be a really good marker for figuring out what the sentiment is. And for oil prices to be going down and the stock market to be going up, right after a conflict like this has begun, especially with the U.S. stepping in, that is a sign that they're not concerned, as in that we have control of the situation and there is not an expectation that the closing of the strait is really necessarily going to happen. Additional context, we only get, I think it's like 5-6% of our crude oil, personally, the United States, that goes through the strait. Globally, it's 20% of global consumption. However, it's 60% of, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's 60% of China's crude oil,
which is comes why everybody in the global community is like, why would they say they're going to do that? Why? Like, they already are at an extreme disadvantage from what happened over the weekend. But now you're going to punish one of your only allies that could potentially help you out right now by crippling their economy?
Well, not only that. First of all, they would cripple their own economy.
Well, also
so
important.
Not only would it be a negative effect for themselves, but also their biggest ally, or one of their biggest allies, because, I mean, Russia also dances around with them. But one of their biggest allies is China. And I guarantee you China's not going to be okay with them, with 50% of their crude imports that run through the strait getting blocked off.
Yes.
Also, historically, Iran has never completely closed the strait, not even in the 1980s during the Iran-Iraq tanker war. Like, they'll threaten it. There's a lot. Iran does a lot of threatening.
Well, yeah, last week, didn't they say on one of the days, like on, was it Friday, Thursday or Friday, that they were going to do something overnight that the world was going to remember forever? Like,
yeah,
they're always posturing.
There was a propaganda video that was released by Iran last week.
Where they were like petting missiles.
They're petting so nuclear missiles. Okay.
And so then, weird.
So nothing has happened so far.
Yeah.
So now if it were to happen, would prices go up? Yes, of course, because, you know, it doesn't, even if it's, now, thankfully, we are significantly more energy independent than other countries, especially China. And so that put us at an advantage because their ally China is not going to want it. We can sustain it more than our enemies could. So would prices go up? Yes, but I don't think it would be like significant. And I don't think it's going to happen. I think this whole like parliament votes to close the Strait of Hormuz is just that. They voted. Cool. All right. What happens next?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, okay. So, and then the other question that was coming up a lot was the question about wanting more clarity of Tulsi's March testimony. So the media is portraying it as Gabbard not supporting the president or not agreeing with the assessments. And there was a lot, especially leading up, there was a lot of narrative out there of Tulsi being on the out, not being in the circle, being left out, and being in conflict with Trump and the administration.
Well, and it didn't help because every single time Trump was asked a question, every reporter would be like, well, do you agree with this? And he'd be like, no, who said that? And they'd be like, ha-ha, you know, Tulsi Gabbard
did.
It. Yeah. And so, and then he'd be like, well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with her then. And so they kept trying to, and they got several. I think he did that two or three times on camera. So there was that soundbite going around that he doesn't agree with his own DNI. It was just trying to sow dissension. Basically.
Well, and even immediately after, when they were releasing the photos, they released four photos of the Situation Room at the time of the operation, which, by the way, the president was wearing a MAGA hat.
Yeah.
In the Situation Room, full suit.
I saw it.
Did that bother you?
I don't know. Sorry. I just don't like it. But whatever. We have bigger fish to fry. But I will say, it made me think about, I need to go read a book about it, about the really interesting position that the official like White House or presidential photographer is in.
Yeah.
Like, he's inside those moments, you know, because, and my husband was like, well, maybe they like snap the photos and then they tell him to get out. And I'm like, well, I'm sure at some point they do, but he is privy to a lot of information. And I want to know, like, what kind of like paperwork did he have to sign ahead of time? Like, you're going to hear and see a lot of stuff and you can never talk about any of it, like ever. Because so much of what they are privy to is classified.
Yeah.
And they're in these really sensitive moments. I always think about that when I see the photos from these tense times in American history. And then just some photographers bopping around taking pictures of people.
Yeah, this isn't an aide.
He goes home like at night to his apartment and goes to bed like a normal person. But he was like in the Situation Room. You know what I mean? I want to read his Substack. That's what I want. I want him to start a blog.
My guess is that he doesn't have a Substack because of that.
Correct. He has signed a waiver. Anyhow.
But when those photos were released, a lot of people pointed out that Tulsi was not in the pictures. There was a lot of people that weren't in the pictures, you guys. Yeah. A lot of people weren't in the pictures. It was later revealed that Tulsi was in the Situation Room during that operation. So first of all, this entire narrative, it is my belief from all the signals that I see that it's really the media trying to foment division, either because they believe in it or because they want to create the illusion of it. But regardless, they were misinterpreting, I would say, and what Tulsi Gabbard also said when she put out a post, because she has put out publicly that her and the president are aligned. And she specifically shared a video where she included a clip of her testimony. And along with that clip, she included a statement that said, "The dishonest media is intentionally taking my testimony out of context and spreading fake news as a way to manufacture division. America has intelligence that Iran is at a point that it can produce a nuclear weapon within weeks to months if they decide to finalize the assembly. President Trump has been clear that can't happen, and I agree. Here is my full testimony." And she shared about a 2-minute video of that particular segment. And so, yes, in the video, she did say Iran is not building a nuclear weapon. However, that is within the context of acknowledging that they have unprecedented uranium stockpiles, and within the acknowledgement that it would only take a matter of weeks for them to go, as we have mentioned before, from 60% to the 90% that is required in order to create a nuclear weapon. Yeah. And the IAEA, which is the organization that polices nuclear development, found that uranium particles enriched to 83.7% purity were found at the Fordo facility in January 2025. So all of these narratives that you're hearing specifically in regards to, you know, a lot of leftists are saying they weren't building a nuclear weapon. There is no evidence of them enriching past 60%. That they're in none of that is correct. They're citing information from the past, but we're talking about January 2025. They found 83.7% purity at Fordo. So you're just like fractions away from 90% purity.
Yeah.
Also, going from 60 to 90 is a matter of weeks. So when people are like saying they weren't, I mean, you can maybe argue that they weren't actively building, but at what point is it okay to be like, now they've built it?
Yeah.
Let's.
And now we can. One of the most simple arguments for what happened over the weekend that I heard that actually made sense to me, it's not that this person's defending it, but to all of the people who are like, they've been saying the same thing for 25 years. Come on. They just wanted an excuse to do what they did, blah, 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 blah. I heard someone say, you know, Trump has never wanted Iran to have a nuke. Obviously, he has said it 1,000 times. He's on record going back like
before he was president.
Yeah. Like 15 years. Okay. So just he has been very consistent on that. He has never wanted them to have it. And he was in office for 4 years where people were saying things like that, like they're days away from it. It's very close. It's imminent. And he never did anything. He did not go in and bomb it. He did not make gestures like we're going to take you out. We're going to take out your facilities, whatever. He had 4 years and he didn't. And so what that kind of says to me is he has new information now and he is now taking it to the next step. He's taking it very seriously. Again, he's never wanted them to be able to have the nuclear capabilities. And so why is it? I don't know. I understand that people get tired of hearing the same narrative all the time. And, you know, I get that. But why can't we just acknowledge that perhaps he has new information that we, the civilians of the United States of America, do not have?
All right, friends, hold on to your pantalones because Rachel has some serious intel for all the parents out there who are tired of the media dumpster fire, but still want your kids to know what's happening in the world. Rachel's out here living the dream, raising lambs, homeschooling 4 girls, and actually has to deal with the "Mom, what's happening?" questions without traumatizing anyone after overhearing our enthusiastic podcast conversations. So Rachel, tell our listeners about this amazing video news opportunity that apparently is going to save their sanity.
Okay. So a lot of our listeners are familiar with World News, but have you guys heard of their student-focused video product, WorldWatch? It's daily news videos designed specifically for kids, but from a Christian worldview, like fact-based journalism that helps kids explore the world, learn news literacy, all while recognizing God's design in everything.
And you don't have to pre-screen it like content, you know, policing.
Exactly. 10 minutes, a video a day, no weird agenda, no scary stuff they're not ready for. Plus, with a paid subscription, you get access to their full archive if you want to catch up or revisit stories. Just real news videos you can actually feel good about letting them watch. And right now, you can get 3 free months. So check it out. Because unlike everything else in the media, you can trust this.
There you have it, friends. Rachel approved video news for your kids with 3 free months to try it. And we know Rachel has strong opinions. So if Rachel trusts it with her 4 girls, you know it's the real deal.
I think that that is just a logical question to ask. I think that there's a lot of hubris right now online from a lot of people who are overnight Middle East correspondents and have decided that they understand everything they need to know about nuclear enrichment, and they are kind of wish casting. But maybe some things have changed. And like you said, in the data you gave, they were closer than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I'm not understanding why people can't acknowledge that that possibly is the truth. You know what I mean?
Well, and not only that, but let's also remember that in previous times, Iran was not directly firing on Israel like they have been most. Now, you know, people will debate that, well, Israel started it because they did a preemptive strike. Well, let's also remember that Iran fired on Israel, what, has it been twice over since October 7th or October 8th.
Right.
And in addition to that, all the proxies that they fund in the region that Israel has had to pick away at since, well, I mean, honestly, for decades, but most recently since October 7th.
Yes.
So to say that Iran wasn't, it's just kind of minding their own business, and then Israel.
Are you kidding? Their proxies are attacking the United States troops. Like, again, I think people get they have a very narrow scope of information that they focus on in times like these, as opposed to like more broader context.
Well, I think it's a narrow scope of information. And I think, you know, again, messaging is very powerful. And if you can just repeat simple messaging over and over again, and you're busy with your life, which makes complete sense, and that is not a criticism at all. But you know, if you hear it enough in the background, which is why we're here and we love doing this, and you don't have the additional context and information, it's very easy to just to say, well, they've been saying it for 20 years, or this is just like Iraq, or you know, when all of these talking which frankly that's what they are, they're talking points, have additional context. And I'm not saying that you have to agree with the president or Israel or anything like that. I am just arguing that when you hear those simple statements, I would highly recommend that you find a source, which I would recommend us, that will go deeper into that statement and give you more information for you to really fully make the decision for yourself. So like when I wrote that post about, because everybody was like, well, this is going to be just like Iraq, or like, why would we do it? This reminds me of weapons of mass destruction, like just like Iraq. They're not the same. It's apples and oranges. And I wrote a post and I'm like, look, you don't have to agree with it. I'm not saying that you have to support what we're doing. Right. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to use this talking point, please know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because this is not the best argument. There are other arguments that are more valid. Stop using this one because, frankly, in my personal opinion, it's a lazy one. And this is why. Mm-hmm. And so I made some people upset about that one. But, you know, I'm not doing it right if I'm not upsetting at least one person somewhere out on the internet. So to summarize on Gabbard, she did say they were not building, but she was saying that they were not building in the context of like they did not get the IKEA instructions to assemble the bomb yet. Uh-huh. However, all of the pieces were laid out and at the ready, and they're ready to go if they needed to, and that they had enriched the uranium to the point that they are a significant threat. And then in addition to that, we got the information from the IAEA that they were, for the first time, according to the IAEA, even though there's disputes about this, that Iran was non-compliant with nuclear obligations for the first time in 20 years. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and again, I mean, Tulsi made that statement, and she'd only been in office for how long? Or she wasn't even...
She was in the confirmation hearing. Right. She wasn't even in yet.
Again, I know that people don't like to hear it, but sometimes the administration knows things we don't. So, I mean, that also exists. The fact that there is intel that they're going to receive, that it's not going to be made privy to us civilians. So, I don't know. Maybe something changed when she got in there and she was like, oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and we don't have to blindly trust the government, obviously.
No, of course not. Hello,
obviously.
If you've been around here, you understand that we don't just do that. And they do have information we don't have. So, I mean...
It's a tightrope here, okay? Yeah. This is nuance.
We're trying to balance well. Sometimes we do great. Other times, not so much. But we're trying.
We do our best. Another question that we got a lot was, did Trump need congressional authority to carry out these strikes? No. No. No.
No, he did not. You're going to hear a lot of...
Moving on.
Also, everybody became a Middle East correspondent overnight. Also, everybody became a constitutional lawyer overnight as well.
All right. So I know I'm being a little sassy here, but let me just explain to you why he did not need this. And I actually wrote this in our chat. So if you were in our Substack chat, you would have the answer to this question. But let me read my answer so I get everything correct. I said, the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the power to declare, this is via Article 1, Section 8. So a formal war declaration does need their approval. However, this was an operation. And it says, but as Commander-in-Chief, Article 2, Section 2, the president can launch military operations without Congress, especially for quick national security moves or limited strikes, which clearly... From the behavior that we have seen from our president in the last, 4 days, 3 days, whatever, this was an operation. In fact, immediately following this operation, they put out statements very quickly to make it completely clear. We are not attempting to engage with a war with Iran. We have no, as long as you guys behave and everything goes how we would like, we have no intentions of continuing to strike on Iran. So, in short, if it is a targeted operation, it is under Article 2, which is the executive, which is commander in chief. If, let's say, this were to go past 60 days, other asterisk there is that the president has like 60 days to conduct an operation or, you know, for things to kind of work things out, then you would have to go to Congress and for a declaration of war, and Congress would have to approve that. However, let's provide some historical context. I love doing this, right? So historical context here is we all talk about the Iraq-Afghanistan war after 9/11. Newsflash, there was never a congressional declaration of war with Iraq or Afghanistan following 9/11. What ended up happening there was actually that Congress passed the 2001 Authorization for Use of Military Force, which is the AUMF. Now, this was very broad. Think about this is the time of the Patriot Act and everything like that. This was very broad. And it let the president, any president, go after Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and their buddies. So like anybody that could
any
terrorist that could be remotely associated with having participated in 9/11. However, this has been stretched significantly.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of created other arguments to continue in the, what I would argue, honestly, the money-making scheme of the military industrial complex. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the war machine. But its initial aim was, because it was the first time that we were in a conflict that was not specifically a state actor, but a collection of terrorist groups, it required this like authorization because there wasn't really a country to declare war against. However, this authorization has been expanded. But we never declared war. And we went 20 years in that conflict, never having Congress declare war.
Yes.
Now, Massey's one of the biggest critics. He's pointed, you know, he called this unconstitutional. He said,
Ro Khanna to bring legislation to the floor to basically stop this and other attempts to do the same.
Well, and I'm not 100% sure even specifically, like, there would be questions maybe, is Trump using the AUMF for this operation? It's not even, let's say even if he is, it's not necessary. It's not necessary because under Article 2, he can conduct secret strategic operations, especially when there is a primary concern of national security. Now, right. You can also debate, was this a concern for us directly? Was it not? It depends on whose side you are, what you're going to argue. Like, let's just be honest. And depending on what your opinion is, I think you can argue to some validity either way. My personal opinion, I don't see the negative of Iran not having nuclear capabilities and the frankly display of force, peace through strength, which is a doctrine of the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. So like you're also putting on a show, for lack of a better words, mm-hmm. for our other enemies. So yeah. I don't necessarily see this as a negative for the United States as long as we don't end up in an all-out war with boots on the ground, which I think that's why.
And that's why I think we heard Trump very frustrated this morning with the direction that it's going in, which some people are going to say, see, told you this was going to happen. Because when things start to escalate like this and then other countries are brought in, things can go south really quickly. So we just need to pray against that and that it stopped with the attack on their facilities, that no civilian deaths, there was no casualties, and that is over. Their retaliation against our U.S. base in Qatar, and now it's finished. And I think you're sensing from Trump, he's like, are you kidding? We did what we had to do. You guys are starting this up again, and we just need to pray it doesn't escalate any further. But I kind of feel like that's not going to happen.
Well, we'll see. I mean, let's just be honest. Neither one of them, Israel or Iran, are particularly well-behaved or cooperated. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, if we're going to be really honest. And even though Israel has been putting out public statements that they don't want regime change in that they don't want to go into Iran and force a regime change, there are advocates for that within Israel. However, there's also advocates mm-hmm. for that here in the United States. Lindsey Graham, I'm looking at you, bro. Okay.
Oh, he said on the floor of Congress yesterday that he wants Israel to finish the job. But I mean, he just
whatever the heck. I mean,
he's been saying that for a long time, though. Like, and then there's also a lot of finish the job.
Yeah, there's also a lot of questions about like, well, why hasn't anything happened within Iran and the population of Iran? And let me remind you guys that they are currently within a conflict. They have no internet. The state propaganda is being pumped into their living rooms or whatever, wherever they watch and get their information. So they don't. They likely don't have a full understanding of whether
what
or
exactly
not
is happening. Yeah.
Yeah. The regime has been weakened enough for them to feel to have the confidence to have an organic revolution regime, air quote, regime change within Iran. And yeah. People like Israel and the United States are dropping bombs. So yeah. They're not exactly going to take to the streets anytime soon. You know, they're probably hunkered down. So at the same time, I would say, obviously, if Iran continues to attack Israel, Israel has a right to defend themselves. But also at the same time, Israel, this is my opinion, at some point would need to back off to allow an opportunity for something organically to develop in Iran. I don't know. We'll see what's going on. What's more concerning that a lot of people are talking about is here domestically.
Yes, that's what I've been parroting a lot because I know,
yes, I know
that's not getting any of the headlines, but
our concerns of possible sleeper cells mm-hmm. in the United States that might get activated against Americans or against, you know, any of our anything domestic. Mm-hmm. And I would, for me, like, what are your thoughts on this? I'd like to hear what you have to say first.
I think that it's always been a concern of mine, actually, terrorism inside the country. And I think it's even more so on my mind because we have a president that was asleep at the wheel, literally and figuratively, for the last 4 years and let millions of people, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, just flood into the country, many of whom were not vetted. We have no idea where they're coming from, what their intentions were, and what they could possibly do to our country, you know. And I think that that puts us in a really vulnerable, dangerous position. If you listen to voices like Sarah Adams online, she was on the Sean Ryan show. She specializes in a kind of intel where basically people, they're getting so good at being able to circumvent security measures, even, you know, on airplanes and being able to wear certain like suicide vests similar to
the ones you saw in the church attack over the weekend in Syria. And it's not just that. I'm not necessarily just concerned about sleeper cells. I'm concerned about the one-off.
I'm more concerned about the lone wolf than I am the sleeper cell. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm concerned about both, honestly. And I'm also not just concerned about that. I'm concerned about if and when Iran kind of gets their act together and things might slow down just a little bit. I am nervous about, and I have been, not just with Iran, but with China and Russia as well. I'm concerned about cyber attacks. I'm concerned about attacks on our grid, which is, by the way, pretty outdated and needs some help. I think I'm concerned about that as well. It's not just terrorism at the local level. It's national security from a cyber point of view. So I think we are very vulnerable inside our borders for a lot of reasons. But, you know, I think the biggest concern I have is probably us not knowing who is inside the country because of the past administration.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's valid to be concerned. I think it's wise to be vigilant.
Yes.
And because of that, I will also encourage people that are listening that the United States is on high alert specifically because of that.
Yeah.
Specifically because of the prior administration, knowing that people, that it was porous, that anybody could have probably slipped through. And it's not just at a federal level that there's already been, you know, advisories put out to be more vigilant, but also at local levels, especially in the larger cities, which is believed to be the which people would assume would be the targets. But I'm not even 100% sure that, you know, I guess like for Mass Effect, you would think large targets in major cities like New York, Chicago, LA, something like that would be a bigger target. However, I don't want to freak anybody out. I think it would be more effective to do softer targets, you know, where they're hard, it's harder to control and it's harder to, you know, maybe you don't have as many people injured or killed. But, you know, if the goal is terror and you do a bunch of little ones that you can't really figure out that are harder to control, I think psychologically that could be more effective. And so that would be a little bit more of my concern. Mm-hmm. However, I am encouraged, let's just say that since 9/11, we haven't had anything significant happen here in the United States from an organization. We have had lone wolf events, but we haven't had anything, you know, near, not even close to what happened on 9/11. And hopefully we continue to learn our lessons from that, from intelligence not communicating with each other. In fact, if you really think about it, the previous administrations had a lot of heads up before 9/11 happened. There was a lot going on, and there were opportunities to take out Osama bin Laden that previous administrations did not take advantage of. And so if you want to kind of, you know, reflect on past history and compare that to our current administration, you know, what would have happened if Trump did what every other administration did and kicked the can down the road, and then maybe they did act? You know, we learned that lesson on 9/11. So, you know, for our younger listeners, you all hear about 9/11 as if it was almost as if it was a day that just happened without any precursors. And that is not the case at all. There were multiple precursors. There were multiple signs that this was potentially to happen. And it was really a lack of communication between our intelligence agencies, which now is why Tulsi Gabbard has the position that she has. That position was created in response to that lack of communication. Also, because previous administrations, specifically the Clinton administration, did not take action at the time that, you know, they had the opportunity to do so. So hopefully, I mean, with that context, we're in a better place now than we were then. But unfortunately, time will tell.
Well, and it's been 24 years. And, you know, people don't think every year, oh, hey, it's been another year where there hasn't been a mass terror attack. You know, those are the moments that go by and you don't think in your mind, oh, I'm so grateful that that hasn't happened. But if you look back, you go, wow, that hasn't happened. Horrible, horrible day like that day has not occurred since. And so, you know, I'm constantly grateful for our military and for our national defense and the people who work in intelligence, because who knows how many terror attacks they've thwarted. We'll never know about all of those.
No,
we're never going to hear about those. So,
no.
Yeah, I mean, there's reason for hope. We have a military that pulled off what it pulled off on over the weekend, and we have a national intelligence apparatus that is very powerful. So my prayer is that cities and states are on alert and law enforcement is briefed adequately and that we provide them the resources that they need to protect us.
Well, I saw something yesterday that I thought was really interesting. The confidence that the military currently has of being able to do their job and not having their hands tied, I think is also very significant for morale of our military and just their capabilities to act effectively and, you know, quickly when needed, because they no longer feel constrained that they have to, you know, obviously, they still have to go through a chain of command, but that everybody is on the same page of what the goal of the military is. Mm-hmm. And I was watching, I had Fox News playing yesterday afternoon in the background, and they have this commentator. He's a veteran, Joey Joe.
Yeah,
Joey Joe? He has his name is Joey Jojo. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that's essentially his name. And I think he was talking to Dana Perino. So he basically said, I've been talking to my connections. I've been talking to people who were in Iraq who have been put on alert. This was right after the strike on the Qatari base. And one of the things he said is that we're alert. You know, we're a little we're all paying attention. We're a little on edge. But, one of the things is that at least we know that if we do get fired on, we can fire back.
Yeah.
And so Perino was kind of insinuated, is that kind of a comment on the previous administration? He's like, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
In other words, what they're like, that is the military feels that they have the support of their president, of their commander in chief, and their higher ranking officials. Because remember, you know, we're talking about the Secretary of Defense too here, that they're going to have their back and aren't just going to tell them they have to sit on their hands because they still need to figure out in war game and diplomacy and all of the red tape has to be worked out before they can defend themselves, which is what we have experienced in the past administration. So I think that's really significant too, that not only with our military, but here domestically, our intelligence and our law enforcement feels a lot more confident that they have the support of this administration. And I think that helps a lot in aiding our security.
Yeah.
So I think that is it. Obviously, that is not the end.
Plenty will happen today, I am sure.
There was one question that I wanted to ask you about that is completely unrelated, but I just thought it would provide some interesting commentary before we sign off. Is the New York mayoral race?
Yeah, where they're going to elect a socialist.
So right now, if you guys don't know, in New York,
voting starts today.
Today for the Democrat primaries. Mm-hmm. And they have rank voting, meaning that you only need, I think, 20% of the vote in order to get the nomination. Yep. And this is for the Democrat candidate because Adams is running as an incumbent, even though he's running as an independent. Mm-hmm. Or is he? I mean, did he switch officially to the Republican Party?
Or is he still actually switched it on his papers? I don't know.
I think he's running, as far as I know, he's running as an independent, but he's the incumbent. And so the Democrats are running a primary. The two main candidates are Cuomo, as in Andrew Cuomo, the former governor of New York. And this dude called, what is his name?
I don't even know how to say it.
Zorman Malamani or something like that. Zohan, which honestly, I'm so sorry. But every time I see his name, all I can think of is Big, the movie Big of the fortune teller in in the movie Big was Zohan or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of every time I see his name.
No, he's a diehard socialist and makes no qualms about it. He also, I mean, I'm hoping to do a bunch of stories on it today, but he also is extremely apologetic to the Muslim community, saying that they need to be in the halls of Congress. They need to be in leadership in every state. And he's got anger issues.
He has no experience. And when I say that, I mean literally no experience. He was a rapper 5 minutes ago.
But even more frightening is the values he espouses. And we can't get into it. But I mean, this is probably the only time you'll ever hear me say, I hope that Andrew Cuomo is picked.
So his name is Zoran Mamdani. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think is how you pronounce that. And it is wild because right now, like, you don't go on TikTok. I have gone on TikTok and I have seen liberals begging and pleading almost in tears that this man wins like the mayoral race.
It is wild
to me. He is talking about, and for all the entire, everyone that is running a business in the city of New York has said, if this man wins, we are leaving the city.
Yeah.
Because he is talking about free rent, free transportation, free school.
He wants to basically get rid of the cops, essentially. He was like, I just feel like we don't need them. We can have some, psychologists go work with all of the, you know, crime in our city, which is, it's all like BLM talking points, but worse. And he actually wants to implement them. And he actually is like a step away from being able to. He's going to wreck that
but
city.
But he's like an AOC, very charismatic, kind of charming, very smooth. Yeah.
And so, of course, all of like the 20-somethings are like, yes, fight the oligarchy. Let's do the socialism. Let's do it right. It's like if they elect this guy, my gosh.
It will be the end of New York City. I mean,
truly.
I can't fathom that this in any way would be a positive for New York City.
No.
So, but there's a lot of feelings, especially in the, you know, I saw it was the Free Press did, like, went around in parks, I think in Brooklyn, and were asking people about the race, and they were just loving on this guy, on him. And just thinking like, oh, he just seems like a really cool guy, like a normal person. And I just can't. We'll see what happens. I honestly would be surprised if he ultimately wins. But I don't know. Time will tell. New York is weird. Times are weird. This guy's weird. I don't think it'll be good.
Nope, it's not going to be great.
So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button. Give us a 5-star rating. Leave us a comment, a lovely review, because it really helps the podcast grow. Share it with a friend. And to put it on your radar, we have an interview coming up, a guest that for next week. Why don't you tell our listeners about our guest that's going to be coming up?
Yeah, we are having on my friend Katie Faust. I'm sure some of you have heard about her. She is the head over at Them Before Us, an organization that really specializes in the rights of children. She is very vocal on X, on other social media outlets, really pressing for us to look more deeply at what we're allowing, in our country as far as surrogacy, gay adoption, and what the implications are for children, because we often have those conversations only thinking about the needs, desires, and rights of the parent. And she really is taking the conversation in a much needed direction where we're focusing on what children have a right to and what helps them to flourish. So I'm really excited to talk with her about a lot of the things that are happening in our country and what that means for the kids.
I'm excited too. I think it's going to be a great conversation. That'll be coming out next week. So if you want to listen to that, make sure that you're following us. That's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Here's a reminder that the media is trash, the world is on fire, and we have no tolerance for it. I'm joking. It's not. It's going to be fine. Okay. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Looking to buy your dream home? Or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.